Near the end of the beginning of the second decade of the 21st century, a group of intrepid gamers gathered together with one goal in mind, to play quick start adventures for role-playing games and review them. Quick starts, a set of simplified rules, characters, and adventures meant to highlight and show off the rules for a specific game system. Their one goal, to recruit new players to their full game. Our heroes gather their allies and begin to master the ways of these quick starts. One of them stands forth, fist raised high, and declares they shall kick in the quick.
Still can't believe you're going with that.
In this episode, Arcanus, Ghost of Albion, and Valiant. Arcanus, GM'd by Ruby.
Hello, if you're listening, then you've tuned into another episode of Kick in the Quick, where we're going to be talking about yet another quick start game. With me at the table are...
I'm Doug Rulick. I've been in several of these already. Hello again, folks.
Calvin Korn. This is actually the first one that I've done of these particular things, so...
And I'm Ruby Jones, the wife of the wonderful podcast master, John Manus, and Iron GM, first Scarab Iron GM.
Oh, there goes that.
Well, you know.
It's okay.
Hey, hold on, let me...
There it is, it was like, stupid Calvin.
Touch me.
All right.
That was the practice run.
Yeah, I can either redo the whole thing over again or...
Nah, you got the part where I said I was Ruby Jones and I'm the
Ruby
wife...
Ruby Jones and the...
Yeah, and I'm Ruby Jones and I'm the wife of the wonderful podcast master, John Manus here.
And that's me. Hooray for me. Okay, so let's get into this thing. This time, Ruby was the GM for this game.
Again, I did Dragon Age previously.
That's right. This is your second quick start that you're doing for us. So what game did you pick?
I chose Arcanus, The World of Shattered Empires, and this is by Paradigm Publishing?
Paradigm Concepts?
Paradigm Concepts, excuse me. The reason I picked it up was we had a person on Facebook ask if any of our GMs at Scarab knew or ran it, and we happened to have them as a sponsor, and they were in our library, so I picked it up, decided to try and learn it.
Awesome. So this is a spare... awesome. So this is a Scarab sponsor
yes.
game that we're actually running.
It is.
Pretty cool. So what is the basic gist of this game, Ruby?
Well... That it's a very in-depth game. This is more than from just the quick start. There's a lot of different races. There's a lot of different lands, and they have just gotten out of this really long, terrible, terrible war with demons and other things like that. Just like the name suggests, the Shattered Empires. It's just like that. There's Romans. There's Egyptian feel. There's in. Infernal demony feels, there's lizard people, there's elves, there's dwarves, you know. So it's definitely a fantasy game, but it incorporates a lot of other kind of genres. They're very, very centurion feel to a set of the groups.
But there's still a little bit of firearms in there.
There
too,
are firearms. Yes, like in the playtest, there's actually a character that had pistols, and one of the NPCs had a...
had a rifle.
Rifle, yeah. Right. So it's a little, but there's still magic and stuff as well.
Okay, so it's a high fantasy, but it's also a high adventure.
Correct.
Sort of game.
Yeah.
And you could have sold it to me by just saying, you know, oh, there's Romans. And you could have sold it to Calvin by saying...
Oh, there's lizard people.
Right. And you could have sold it to Doug by saying, I don't know.
Gaming?
Hey, do you want to play?
Flintlock pistols.
Flintlock pistols would have done it. Okay.
Not too often you see firearms in a fantasy game.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
Work well.
Yes.
Very good point. All right. Well, Ruby, since you were the GM, how easy do you think it was to learn this particular quick start, and how much prep time do you think it took?
Well, I kind of looked at it backwards because I didn't realize that there was a quick start for it. So I actually read through the majority of the main book first. The quick start itself and the scenario, I briefly skimmed it maybe an hour one day last week online, and then I picked it up for maybe another half an hour and reread everything in it. But again, this is after I'd already pretty much pre-read the whole book.
Okay.
So unfortunately, I can't give you a true sense of how the quick start is versus, you know, how quickly the quick start was easy to pick up versus having read it, because I've already... I knew too much about it prior to the quick start.
All right. Well, what do you think, there was enough information in it rules-wise to have just used the quick start?
Yes, I do. It's actually very prettily put together. It's all color, and there were only a few minor quirks. Actually, of all the rules, there's only one thing that I noticed that was kind of off. Was there's a section in there that talks about cover, partial and standard and total cover or whatnot, and they only put one of them in there, and it's like the page cut off, and then they just went over to another item, concealment. That's the only, as far as the quick start rules, that I saw that was kind of off. The other thing that came up during the course of play is we had some spellcasters, and I would have liked if they had described the spellcasting a little bit more detail than they did. But everything that they put in there, really, I think it went pretty well. Those are probably the only two
real rules things that could have been
that came up. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about these pre-gen characters that we got to play. Now, Ruby did mention there was lizard folk. Sadly, no lizard folk in the quick start.
No. There were only four pre-gens to this one. One of them was called... one of them was just a plain old human who... He cast spells and fought with magic, so he was kind of like a battle magi. There was the koi, which are better than humans, essentially.
When you say koi, I think fish.
I do too.
Spelled like that.
How would you pronounce it? It's K-O-I.
Kyo, maybe?
Okay, that's koi.
That's koi to me, yeah.
This game was filled with unpronounceable words.
Well, unpronounceable if you...
Well, it seems like everything related to at least these humans, the Egyptian, or not Egyptian,
Centurion.
The Centurion guys, the Roman guys, it's like they opened up, they said, well, let's open up this Roman history
book. How many
book
Roman words can we cram
we'll
on
use
it?
Use all that, because it was like you were saying stuff, and I was like, holy crap, I remember that from...
Yeah.
From history classes and such.
Then there was one of the Val races, which are basically the Godborns. They're the descendant, the physical descendants of the gods. They're supposed to have psionics, but this particular quick start pregen did not have psionics.
He had flintlock pistol.
Yeah.
Instead.
Yeah.
It's like, I could give you powers, but I'm going to give you a gun instead.
Then the last one that nobody chose to play, since we only had three people, was an Elorai, which is essentially an elf.
Okay.
And he was bow and sword, but he was a really good fighter.
And he was specialized in demon hunting?
Right.
I think it is?
No, he was actually sent out by his people to learn how others fight in order to kill them.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're a bit of a elven supremacists.
That is because if you actually read the whole history in the book, which they give you almost 200 pages of, is that the humans essentially killed all of their living gods except one. So they detest human beings.
Right.
They are a constant war with them. They don't really get along with them. It's one of those... They're xenophobic for a reason.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why the main book... To deviate a little bit from the quick start, so big is Arcanus has been around for years.
Since
it really
2000?
Has. Well, this
version is 2011.
Originally, it started out as a living campaign for Dungeons and Dragons, D&D. I think 3.5 or 3.0.
Yeah,
and
it was a supplement, and then it grew out
right,
of Dungeons and Dragons.
And I want to say it was when it went to 4th edition that they said, "Well, we're gonna deviate into our own thing."
And they do have their own living campaign as well.
Right. So, well, what do we think of our pregens that we were given? Whoever wants
well,
to start.
Well, you chose. You
that
were
we
given.
Chose. Yeah. That we chose.
Which I'm very happy with what I chose, which was Kadena, the
hot chick.
The koi hot chick.
The koi hot chick. That's,
which I don't think we've actually said was kind of a priestess.
Yeah, she was a priest.
It's a really bizarre background, but I think that kind of fits, give you a vibe of the setting.
Yeah.
Because you're brave and, what, heroic, but...
She's
a big contradiction.
She's a very big contradiction. She's heroic. However, she is more than the first to just go, hey, let's fight. She loves... she worships the deity of... the god of shadows, music, and murder. But hey, she can heal you.
Well, that's always important.
Yeah. And she's also got some really good, some like debuffs and adding to damage type spells that she can do.
Okay. Well, what do you think about the way the character sheet was laid out?
It honestly, it took some getting used to, but I think well within the first combat, it was pretty.
Yeah, I think as the only one playing a non-spellcaster, I didn't really have any issues. I think most of the issues came with the spellcasting. There was a pretty well laid out, primary sheet that had all your stats, and then a supplemental sheet that has kind of breakdown of all the neat tricks and.
Yeah, I like that.
And a little bit of a background,
which is kind of how when John or I do NPCs for con games, we do that sort of thing. We make sure all of their extras are laid out.
Right. So for quick start, that's really awesome that was in there.
Absolutely.
We've seen that on a couple of our quick starts that we've done so far. Because I want to say Iron Kingdoms had was very similar to that, too.
I think they had I think they actually had a third page that was nothing but...
Right.
Like an entire page full of history and how everyone knew each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on the pre-generated character sheet, you were talking about how there's the front page and then there's the back page that described it. It also gave you kind of a brief history and kind of gave you a feel for that personality of that character.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and thankfully the brief history of the character wasn't more than just
most of them are
a quarter
only two
of a page
paragraphs.
Or so.
Yeah.
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 And it was enough to really kind of give you an idea of the character itself. The character I was playing... was a very interesting. It was like a battle mage, so I got to see. Oh, this is what some fighting stuff's kind of like. So he's pretty.
He was pretty
hoss as far as fighting.
Yeah.
But it was the spells, and you were mentioning how the spells seem kind of more complicated. Yeah. Part of that was because Calvin and I were like, "Well, let's see if we can push these things."
Yeah,
because they threw this magical little paragraph in there that says, "Oh, by the way, you can combine spells together for a different effect." And I think we both
we were just like, "Oh,
we're both like, what? This is like going to a Chinese buffet. I could put however much I want on this plate,
as long as you can
carry it." Plate.
So,
it's turned out to be
No, I definitely love the concept of the way they did the magic where you can add on to their each spell has most spells have add-ons and then you can actually combine them. It makes it really hard to
what they actually call it is adaptations.
The adaptations.
Right.
So
it makes it hard to cast them, but if you cast them, you can make some really nasty things happen. So
yeah, it was a style of spell casting I don't think I've really seen before.
That's true.
Yeah.
One of the other things is not only could you do it with spells, you can actually do it with the advanced tricks and combat maneuvers and stuff. It's just none of you had, you didn't choose the character that had additional ones that could do it. None of these other, these three pre-gens didn't have extra things that could combine. Whereas the fourth one that you didn't actually had maneuvers that could combine. So it's not only spells that can combine,
but it's
maneuvers
different maneuvers
too.
As well. Which we didn't really get to see that?
Well, that's why I said no one chose that particular one that had that could.
Because the character I chose was, he was the noble, so he was a pistol sword
kind
of guy.
Right.
And he had two weapon fighting, which was kind of it, got to combine attacks.
You don't get a penalty. Anyone can do it, but you got no penalties for doing it.
Well,
and
there was no
extra
really,
stuff.
Really hard, terrible penalties. It took a -2 when I attacked, but... Yeah, it's not nearly as bad as one of the spells.
Right,
Well, I have to say, actually, during playtests and stuff, or not playtests, but quick starts and whatnot, I like to see people push it and try and break it to see just how far it can go, because, well... Let's be honest. You're not really invested. You didn't make the character. You're not going to play a campaign with the character. So why not go balls out and see just what you can and can't do?
Yeah, take it out for a spin. Open it up. See what it can do.
Right.
Which we totally did that.
Totally did.
The spells, yeah, we definitely did.
The only reason I was taken out of the game was because I was casting spells like a fool. I think I almost did that in Iron Kingdoms, though, now. I don't remember.
Well, okay. So we talked about the characters, the pre-gens.
Well, I have a couple things I want to say about the character sheet, because I actually want to point out some negative things about, in particular, the character sheet I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
I had some abilities on my character sheet that I couldn't really figure out what use they were. Like, I have this spell affinity where I'm really good at casting this one spell, Whirling Blade. I don't have that spell. That spell is not in the quick start. Now, I know what you're getting ready to say, but I'm going to...
I know. I'm letting you finish.
Because I also had... There was something else. Oh, there wasn't really... I have a shield, but didn't really tell me anything on there about what this shield actually does for me. I remember we had to look that up some other place.
We actually looked it up in the main book.
So that would have been kind of nice. And then... And this more goes along with kind of the adventure, because normally I think the PC should be... There should be stuff on there that's pertinent to the adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I had this... This thing that works really good against people with shields.
Nobody
with shields.
Yeah.
An ability I couldn't really use on anybody. So that was my really only two complaints about the thing. And I think, and I know you're probably getting ready to say this, it seems like some of the stuff was probably because they actually built the characters.
Correct. The way you build a character, there's certain things you choose that you don't get right away, but it opens up so that you could choose later, which is part of why I think the spell affinity was on there. I think that's because you were a battle mage, so it was kind of a generic blah.
And I think the render shield worthless ability that I had was probably on there because they weren't thinking, oh, this character is built in a vacuum. You know, they were thinking, this character is built for the long haul.
Yeah.
And then they built the adventure kind of after that, so to speak. Which happens sometimes.
Yeah.
But that's perfectly fine.
Overall, I think all of the characters were well balanced as far as, like, their powers and abilities. I don't feel... Doug's character was overshadowed by either of the spellcasters. He still did some really cool stuff and was able to, the other thing I want to note too is this is a very heroic game. You are playing heroes that are basically building your legends in these shattered empires. So it's very hard to die. You have stamina, which is usually pretty high, and then you have wounds, which is like usually pretty low. I think the most someone had was three wounds.
Yeah.
But it's really super hard to get wounds. Apparently the most common way is by getting a critical success, which is basically a 1 in 100 chance of happening.
Right.
So it's very hard to truly be wounded.
Even then, it's not necessarily a 1 in 100 chance.
Yeah.
You start with a 1 in 100 and modify it from there.
Right, right. Yeah.
You basically have to roll 100 on a percentile.
Right.
And then
there's some other stuff that happens as well.
Yeah. So it is truly really hard to die unless you are, as they put it, amongst murderous villains. If you've been vanquished and there's murderous villains around that are going to kill you, rather than steal all your stuff and drop you somewhere.
Drew several parallels to like Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah,
The timings, the way the timing system worked, which we'll get into later.
Because that truly is one of the more interesting mechanics in the game, I thought.
Yeah, absolutely, a lot. Yeah. Very interesting. But the other one is, you know, somebody dropped. Well, as long as you got somebody left at the end of the battle,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's when you get a TPK, you get the game over screen.
Yeah. Well, not necessarily a game over. It could be, you're tied up in
depending
the desert.
On the story. Yeah.
It depends on who you got.
Yeah, if you're being robbed by bandits and you all get knocked out, you're naked.
In this particular adventure, we probably would have been dead.
Yes.
Which,
you would have been demon possessed.
Right. Which, if nobody has anything else to say about the pre-gens at this time, we could talk about the adventure some.
Okay. The gist of the adventure is you all know each other more or less. You decide to travel to this place that has issued a crusade against invading infernal demons. You are basically going to sell your sword there.
Right.
The gist of it is that once you get there, you notice something's off after you've been sent to where you're supposed to be mustered, and it's implied that you meet someone and you become kind of friends with them, so you get a nice... The first two acts become nice role-playing to introduce you into this, so it gives you a little bit of skill rolls, it gives you a lot of interaction time, gives you time to kind of do some snooping, And then you start to come to the conclusion of something's off here. What the heck is going on? Yeah. And then you find the person that you befriended is missing, and you find him, and you basically end up in two large combats at the end. One is kind of a easy combat to kind of get you rolling to start figuring things out, which we all apparently just jump straight into advanced tactics right off the bat.
Which I guess that goes to...
Yeah.
Show you how well they did set up.
Yes.
The, right, yeah. Right.
Right.
It's like, oh, we can do all the crazy stuff right off the bat.
So let's do it, yeah.
And then the final combat is where you confront the what you find out to be is a demon-possessed human. Essentially, you find the real captain of the place that you thought you met earlier, and the other guy has been, the demon has transformed into him and has been issuing orders and basically slowly sending sacrifices down to this altar area to become possessed by demons and basically creating their own infernal army here within the army that's supposed to be killing them. So, as far as the adventure played out, Calvin just kept nailing. He just, without having to do the rolls, he was like instinctively, well, this is how it should be, or not how it should be, but
yeah, you're picking up on all those cues.
All those cues, oh, you yeah. really were. Even with, you know, before I was getting down to it, so I'm just like, the yeah. role-playing part of it just like whizzed by because of...
And that's kind of goes towards how this game is supposed to be played.
Mm-hmm. It is a heavy role-play.
Because it's supposed to be more role-play over, if the role-play kind of over supersedes
combat,
some of the roles,
right.
then so be it.
In the main book, not the quick start, but in the main book, they have a lot of sidebars and gray boxes that say, you know, don't make them roll if it's not going to actually advance anything, only if it's something that a critical failure would affect. So, in other words, if it's like, oh, well, I want to investigate such and such, well don't make them do a roll, make them role play it.
Well, with that kind of mentality, though, I felt... half of this character, my character, because I was the noble, was the talking guy.
Right.
I didn't use half of my special page. Because
yeah.
it's all about, oh, talking and all of this stuff. And
this one wasn't heavy on the talking.
Yeah,
this adventure.
We figured out the
and that's,
plot.
Yeah,
right.
similar to
in
some of the stuff I had.
10 minutes.
Right.
yeah.
And
thanks, Calvin.
Well, I compared to some of the other... some of the other quick starts, I got a really good introduction to the system, but to the story,
correct?
To the world.
Personally, I don't think the adventure gave much to the world and campaign setting.
Yeah, I really
it gave a good amount to the mechanics.
Yeah, which fortunately,
I
the mechanics.
Yeah.
Sell the game
in this case, yes, but
it can ride on the mechanics.
All right,
and I was going to talk about like did this give us a good idea of the setting, and I kind of agree with Doug, it didn't really give me a good idea of the setting per se.
It
was really light on the flavor of the setting. The mechanics were really good. The only reason that they kind of knew a little additional stuff is, like I said, I read the book already, so I gave them a few things here and there that I knew. I would like to point out, when I first picked this one up to choose, I wasn't real thrilled. I was like, man, I don't really want to learn this one, but I should. And I started reading it, and by page 7, and that page 7 is still just the introductory, the history of one of the empires.
And you're talking about the main
game. The main game, yes. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to like this.
See,
and
that's cool.
So... I mean, the history in there really helps flesh it out, and
so
knowing
a lot
all
of story, just not
in
the
quick
start.
Just
right.
not necessarily
not
in
the quick
start. Because because the quick start's really just a bunch of rules. Here's
correct.
Here's how to play
even,
the game.
Even the beginning first. Let's see, how many pages is the quick start? The quick start's
close to 30.
Yeah, close to 30 pages. No, close to 27 pages,
okay.
But that includes spells and pre-gens. But up to page...
which is probably one of the shortest quick starts we've had so far. Yeah.
Up to page 12.
Page length, I think.
Page 1 through 12 is nothing but rules, and it is literally all rules. It's not background, it's not history, it's all background, it's all rules.
Okay.
And then from page 13 to 18 is the adventure with the monster stat blocks.
Okay.
And a few little small maps. That is the other nice thing. This quick start actually had the maps included in it.
I admit that was pretty cool.
So we got to print out the little maps. They weren't big maps, but...
And the maps... Iron Kingdoms did that, but the locales were kind of...
Okay.
Yeah.
And Eclipse Phase gave me something resembling a map, but it wasn't really that useful to what we were doing. Ruby's the only one here who played Eclipse Phase, so
yes.
She knows what I'm talking about. Okay, so as far as this goes, the adventure, we thought it was pretty fun because we got to fight a lot of stuff and play around with the game mechanics, but we didn't really get a good vibe for the setting itself.
I think most of the vibe from the setting came from the character sheets and the characters themselves.
I agree.
The adventure.
I agree.
Yeah.
So since we kind of mentioned mechanics, is there any mechanics that really kind of jumped out at us?
Yes.
I know this wasn't a question I normally ask, but for this one in particular, I felt like there was.
There were, and again, I really don't play many spellcasters. I feel like in this game, I could not. There's no way I could not play a spellcaster because it was so cool being able to make.
Yeah, like combine those spells.
Well,
and the little additional things too.
You mentioned the spells. They're basically set up where you cast the spell. You basically, as they say, there's seven steps to it. You choose your spell, you choose the adaptation if it's available, and the adaptations can do things like increase its range, increase its
radius,
right. add targets to
boost
it.
Boost the damage die.
Not all of the spells have the adaptations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can choose one and then you calculate out your final numbers. And then you basically roll your dice and see what happens.
So one of the cool things about the spells kind of also goes back to the initiative system.
Yes.
Everybody rolls their initiative dice, and you pick whichever one's the lowest.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a master clock that is a d12.
Right.
And everybody sets up their... all the players and the mobs and the bad guys all set up a D12 as well.
Now, Paradigm Concepts actually sells a tracker itself, which is actually has... it's a circle. It has mm-hmm. 1 through 12 on one section, and then it has 1 through 12 on a different color. So it actually
is... So you can track the time.
Right. It's a full 24.
And they actually call it a clock.
They call it a clock. The way initiative works, which is the big thing that really grabbed me, and I was really glad, and it was really interesting, is, like Doug said, you roll your initiative. For example, the character John was playing, his initiative was a 3d10, so you roll 3d10s, you take the lowest, and then you set your clock to whatever that number is. Then the... they have a special... The Chronicler. Yes, that is what the GM is called.
Oh, okay.
Is the Chronicler. Has a master clock that starts at 1. And then it ticks. So once you hit the number that your character goes on the master clock, then you get to act. And multiple people get to go. There was one point in this session where we had 4 different things going on.
Oh,
at the same time.
The same tick.
So we're back to the Final Fantasy comment.
Yes. Yes.
After you go, whatever your action is has a speed, which is that's how far you advance the player's
clock.
So my character was really quick and had daggers and pistols. When he fires the pistol, it's only a 2 versus
many times most of like John's Gladius is a 5.
Right.
Yeah.
I stab somebody with my sword and I got to add 5 to my speed.
So is what you would do at that point is if I did was really lucky, which I did at one point, roll a 1, I get to shoot my pistol and then I would set my clock to a 3. So when the master clock got to 3, I got to go again.
Correct.
The issue with pistols is then it has a reload speed of 10.
So it takes 10 ticks to reload.
So if I were then to immediate reload, I would be put back to 12.
Right.
And once you get to 12, you roll back around to 1.
Right.
Which so is why I think so I would like to get
so definitely. So it definitely doesn't use military to
No. No.
No. So
roll a d24.
Like Final Fantasy VII, you got the little
action
bars when it starts flashing, the character can act.
Yeah.
But it's, it's really cool because you're... movement costs a little bit, and you can do the equivalent to the 5 foot step as an incidental by tacking on 1 or 2 points to your regular action.
Right.
Pretty much anything you do in it is going to advance your clock, movement, spells, attacks, anything like that. It
different
just depends
aspects,
on how much. So.
Yeah. So these. The giant crazy spells that they were trying to pull off, and I do say try.
Yeah.
Poor John.
We'd jack the clock up by like a lot.
I guess one thing, so the...
Unless you fail.
So the spellcasters, after they successfully cast the spell, they then have a kind of a cooldown clock as well.
They have something called
strain yeah.
which means that they should wait until their strain is up, or else they take lots of stamina damage.
Which I tested that rule out.
They start off taking a little bit of stamina damage.
Not good.
You keep doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You keep taking damage.
You just keep taking damage. And it's like an exponential damage the more. It's like, well, I can wait 24 rounds to cast a spell again. Or I can just do it and take 48 points of stamina.
For comparison,
I
had 51. So,
yeah.
Well, the main bad guy only had 60 stamina. His lieutenant had 20, but he had ways to regenerate. And all of the minions only had 1 point of stamina.
Right. Which kind of makes me think of Savage Worlds, because Savage Worlds does something very similar, where it's like all of the extras, as they call them, Savage Worlds.
Yeah.
Or goons, or whatever you want to call them, only have they're kind of just there to kind of take up some space and be like a little obstacle in your way.
Yeah,
and that kind of had that vibe too, which I thought that was cool because it then led to more of a actiony type of fast paced kind of thing, and that initiative clock definitely helped out with that keeping it fast paced.
Especially when I figured out I could do my attack and reduce the speed of my weapon.
And you're like, oh,
I can attack every 3 rounds. What?
Now we did mention that when you cast a spell, you have strain. That just means you shouldn't cast another spell while strained. You
right.
can still attack and do everything else normally.
Oh,
it's kind of like a spell cooldown.
Right. Like,
or in Shadowrun,
magical
you
cooldown.
Could like in Shadowrun, you can overcast. That's kind of that same sort of feel to me. As far as that goes.
And one neat trick was the lieutenant had a regeneration. And
he had two different things.
Well,
to let him
he had a healing
back.
Spell.
That's right.
And then he had a regeneration.
He had a special ability.
Cost 0
speed.
So he just did it. But had a 10 strain. So he could only do it every 10 turns.
Right.
Or 10
right.
ticks.
10 ticks, yeah.
Which... I hit him pretty well, and then he healed back. And
he
then,
fully healed.
Yeah,
he
fully healed back, which I almost had him dead.
He did.
He healed all the way back, and then the next round I did enough with my two-weapon attack to get him.
Yeah.
Yep. That was pretty cool last final battle, even if I was unconscious for the later half of it. But I took out a bunch
of
dudes.
A lot of the guys.
Yeah. I took a bunch of little guys.
So the two really cool things is you can combine spells and maneuvers, and you can do the initiative clock. One of the things that isn't in the quick start that's in the full rules is if there's somebody, say, that came late to the combat, they don't actually roll initiative. They just join in, and they set their personal clock to the
master clock.
When the GM says, okay, you're here finally. They jump in and they just set their personal clock to the master clock.
And that's
then
a more realistic
combat continues.
Way to do it, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's actually only one rolling of initiative ever, and it's when combat first starts. Because it just keeps rolling. So once it is 12, it rolls back to 1.
Yeah, I definitely like that clock. We definitely, for conventions, we'll have to make sure we got have
dials.
An actual either dial or something.
Yeah.
And
well,
I'm wondering
honestly,
if
even with just using D12s,
it wasn't
that bad.
It really
wasn't that bad, but I got to admit, at conventions, I'm a little less lenient than people that I game with because there are people that will cheat.
Nobody cheats.
That doesn't happen.
All right. Well, all right. So we talked about the adventure. We talked about some mechanics. Are there any other mechanics that just kind of like popped or stood out that you want to, that you really want to mention?
Not out of the quick start.
All right. Not out of the quick start.
I would say for this to be a heroic game, to have a 1 in 100 chance to actually pull off a crit.
We didn't
see a crit.
He did a
perception
check.
Yeah, the crit's really, really hard to do. That's my only kind of weird.
Essentially, you have to get double zeros on your action dice. Oh, I guess this is the other thing. Action dice. You always roll 2d10 plus an attribute die. So that it's recommended you have 2d10s that are same color and a third that's a different color, at the very least.
Because it's important to know what your attribute dice is.
The attribute die explodes.
Correct.
Correct.
But if on your two that are same color, the action dice themselves, if they both roll zeros, that's an automatic success. And if included with your attribute die, if it did not explode, if you meet your target number,
it's a critical
success, which,
and this is one of the most common ways to do wounds. An actual wound,
right,
whatever that means. All right, well, cool. Well, in that case, sort of last couple final questions, did we enjoy this quick start, and do we think would the quick start alone make you want to check out the full game itself?
We'll start with Calvin.
I definitely enjoyed the quick start. It was fun. It was all mechanics, which for me, for a quick start, is probably better than story, because you're there for the mechanics. You want to know, would I play this game? And then secondary is the story for me, because if the game mechanics don't grab me, the story isn't going to matter.
Okay.
Beyond that, the quick starter did not tell me I would have the chance to play a lizard person, and that would have sold me.
That would have sold you completely.
The story and the mechanics can be trash. If I can play a lizard person, I'll do it.
Yeah, I thought the mechanics definitely could hold it. I think with the mechanics, I would be interested in playing more. I would have actually liked more of the setting, the story, because I mean, basically, we were in a military camp, and there was talk of demons. Other than that, like, that kind of sounds an awful lot like, you know, Dragon Age, kind of.
Yeah, honestly.
But you know, and you don't get much from the name, you know, there and. Yeah, there's no other linking, you know, it's not like Dragon Age and Iron Kingdoms where there's another game that they're trying to pull you from. But fortunately, the mechanics were really solid.
Do you think that would make you, you already said you would be interested in playing the full game. I'm going to actually agree with both of you, because I think it was the mechanics that really kind of sold me on that, particularly that initiative clock and that combining stuff. And that would, yeah, I'd be interested in trying out the whole game, mainly because, you know, I was like, oh, cool, I'm playing a Roman centurion kind of guy. That's cool.
It's one of John's favorite genre type people.
Can I be a Roman centurion lizard cat?
More or less, yes.
Maybe.
In the full book, you are not, just because you're a lizard person, doesn't mean you're limited to just their region. You can be from any place. In any city.
Yeah.
So, yes, that would make an interesting background.
Lizard centurion.
My egg was found by a centurion.
Like I said, I came at it backwards. I came from reading the full book into the playtest, but I fully agree. There could have really been more background in order to pull, because reading that full book, it is a very rich, very diverse, very interesting setting itself, with the interaction between dwarfs, elves, gnomes, humans, lizard people, superior, the deities, the deity children. Right. So, I mean, there's a lot going on in it. It would have been nice to see more of that in the quick start. But I'm already hooked as far as that. I have too many games I want to play. This is actually only the second game that I am GMing as a GM, because usually I'm just a player. Like I said earlier, I wasn't real thrilled about having to learn it, but I guess it's one of those, tell me I have to do it and I don't want to. But I was very pleasantly surprised and very happy. I lucked out. I got something enjoyable.
That's awesome. It sounds like we definitely got a winner here. This will be really fun to see you
This will definitely be something. I probably will only GM it during conventions, but it's at least something that I will enjoy doing. It won't feel like a chore.
Right. And if this comes out in time, you'll actually be able to check out Ruby Running Arcanus at KingCon and then AtomaCon
at the very least.
November.
Yes.
2 weekends back to back.
We'll see if I'll be doing it at Scarab or not. I have other duties at Scarab that I may not get to GM anything. But,
right.
But you never know.
Yep. All right. So, I think we got a pretty good one here. That's Arcanus, the World of Shattered
Empires.
By Paradigm Concepts.
Ghosts of Albion. GM'd by Matt.
Do you guys need me to tell you the things we're going to talk about again, or just jump straight
just
into it?
Just do it.
Jump in.
Because we're Rebel Gamers. That's how we roll.
Woo! Okay.
Speaking of Rebel Gamers, we're here for another edition of Kickin' the Quick!
No, we're not doing it!
Here for this quick start, we have myself, John. We have my wife, Ruby.
Hey.
We have Clayton.
How's it going?
Clay, who just tried to wave at the camera. wave at the microphone. We have Mary.
Hi.
We have our gracious host, Douglas, or Doug.
Hello.
And our GM for the evening was Scarab Iron GM 2014, Matthew Presson.
What?
Yay.
We finally got... Yeah. We basically pressured him into running his quick start. Finally.
Oh! So, Matthew, what game did we just play? What quick start did we just play?
We totally just quick started Ghost of Albion.
Ah. And what's the basic gist of that game? What type of flavor?
Victorian England and the downtrodden working class and aristocrats and all that's going on. But the truth and reality is there's a bunch of demons and sorcery and witchcraft, and you're the protectors trying to save everyone from all that occultic mumbo-jumbo.
Okay, because without that layer to it, it sounds like a really horrible game.
Hey, there's lots of information about horses.
Charles Dickens the game.
No. See, when you first described Ghost of Albion to me, you were like, oh, it sounds like a great old Victorian...
Yeah, like, I thought it was like Downton Abbey.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It kind of looks that way at demons. First, too, yeah.
Well, see, I didn't know there were demons and stuff. I read the back, and I was like, there was some review that said, oh, it has rules for tea time and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
And I was like, hooray. Glad someone wrote up rules for that.
But it's so much more.
It is so much more. Thankfully, it's so much more.
Thankfully, they added more than tea time to the quick start.
I don't think we didn't have tea time. I feel gypped.
I'm sorry. It wasn't in the quick start.
All right, so this was a quick start about some supernatural Victorian England kind of stuff. There's so many games like that. Was this like your typical Victorian steampunk occult kind of thing?
I honestly haven't played too many of those, so okay. it definitely wasn't steampunk.
Okay.
Yeah, I was going to say the feel.
So it's got that going for it.
Yeah.
It's truly Victorian. It wasn't steampunk Victorian.
Yeah.
The only reason I bring that up is because I felt that was like a refreshing kind of thing to play a Victorian age game that didn't have steampunk in it.
Uh-huh.
Because that seems to be what everybody wants to do with those things.
Yeah, from the quick start, it did feel like there was a lot of magic and fey and things like that, which is fine and interesting.
So dark fantasy meets Victorian England?
I don't even know that it's a
dark
fantasy.
Didn't even seem very dark.
Just, you know...
Well, except vampires
and ghosts.
And all of the ghosts were kind of psychopaths.
Oh, yeah.
I was goofy and lovable.
That's just a fantasy.
Okay, so two out of the three of the ghosts were psychopaths. It's a psychopath vampire.
It seemed like
that's just the way British fairy tales go.
It seemed like first two seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, kind of. If you call that dark fantasy, which it kind of is. But it was kind of, I don't know, felt a little lighthearted to me. But anyway.
Especially when you're making bloody good rolls.
That's right, smashing good rolls.
Brilliant.
So, Matt, how easy was the quick start to learn, and did it take a lot of prep time for it?
The quick start wasn't too difficult to learn. There were a few gaps here and there, and it was very, very railroady. But it wasn't too difficult to work through.
That explains the end part.
Yeah.
As if the railroads were important in Victorian times.
It's like, I will redirect this railroad, which will control the plot. Okay. Well, let's talk about these pre-gens. What do we think about the pre-gens, the character sheets, all that sort of fun stuff?
It would have been nice if Matt had remembered to bring his printouts, and we didn't have to look at them on, like, our phones.
No, that's not a fault.
No, that's
that is not a fault of the quick start.
That's true.
That is purely 100% Matt's fault.
Now, just to clarify, I did have them printed out. I had duplicates of them printed out.
Right.
I just left them all at home.
And traffic was really, really bad.
Yeah. And we believe you.
Uh-huh.
Even though, you know, we're just having to take your word on it, but we believe you.
I don't know. I think that the character sheets were kind of closer to, like, a Fate system character sheet, where you have just, like, a word and a short description.
Yeah.
So it's really left up to interpretation as to what it means.
Like, so much so that they even put a blank portrait so you can draw a character for a pre-gen.
Yeah, I wasn't gonna draw mine.
Not on my phone.
Yeah, the story of the pre-gens was like three sentences.
Right.
But there was a bunch of qualities and drawbacks that you could kind of get a feel. Like, you know,
yeah.
We had several, you know, mental defects of cruel, some larceny.
Obsessions. Age. Seriously old. That's probably still my favorite thing about this.
Yours was the only character that had that anything about their age on it.
Yeah.
No, and the only one without clothes.
Mine said he has chosen not to reveal his age. Playing a vampire.
And clothes, that's right. Your character didn't have clothes.
The character sheet itself, I think, was pretty easy to read. I'm really glad they put the success level table in the bottom corner. Without that, it would be very hard.
Right next to all of the combat stuff.
Correct.
Yes.
So I think the character sheet itself was laid out well.
Whether or not everything was explained well, it's kind of hit or miss.
Most of it
worked really well.
Okay. Yeah, the eyes were easily drawn towards the necessary sections, the things that we were looking for. So there was that.
Now, I didn't have anything on the second page of my character sheet other than some quick descriptions of the drawbacks and qualities. I know some people had some cool spell stuff on theirs.
Yes.
And other abilities.
Yeah. Right, I had lots of spells that my character could cast. I was the only character that was actually human and alive. We had three ghosts, a vampire, and there were two human pre-gens, but we only had five players, so one of them was NPC, and
we got him
drunk.
The ghost proceeded to get him drunk immediately, so he was, like, useless the entire episode.
Now, ghost and the vampire.
The vampire helped, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
He's our designated drinker, so, you know.
I know, his character is an alcoholic, yet he's a ghost. He's incorporeal, so he can't imbibe alcohol, so, yeah.
Now, I understand why a lot of that stuff was on my character sheet, because I was playing Lord Byron, and that's pretty much what he was.
Uh-huh.
But it was kind of funny being like, well, I'm a ghost, but it says here I'm a...
Raging alcoholic.
Raging alcoholic.
I think the characters all had a good flavor to them. They were all very distinct. They were all very different.
Yeah.
There was a little bit of, in my opinion, kind of suspended disbelief, like, why these people are even working together.
Apparently, if you listen / read / watch the BBC Ghost of Albion series,
it makes more sense.
But. Right, because this was really, it's spun out of the some books and webisodes.
Yeah, from BBC I, whatever the I stands for.
It's basically anything the BBC can do except not on television. I don't get that, because I don't think there was a TV show. I don't know. You know what? It doesn't matter.
None of us saw it.
Yeah.
So. Although I might go looking for it now.
Well.
There certainly seemed to be a lot of interesting backstory that we didn't have.
Yes.
And in the scenario, there's even a point where he ended up reading out in such and such and such and such adventure.
This is the person that I encountered in that book that I was in.
Yeah. Yep.
All right. So that's the pre-gen. Now, I did have a little problem with my pre-gen. It had, I don't know why I keep getting the pre-gens that have the weird, crazy things on it. But my pre-gen had notes about skills that William was specialized in, and I was not playing William. So I was like, I don't know why Lord Byron's especially astute about the fact that William is really good with architecture, but but he is.
So in all these quick starts, you're going to get the lame ones and the screwed up character sheets.
Apparently.
Because in the Dragon Age one, you had the messed up one.
That's my goal. Yeah, the guy with a piece of zero, so I just kind of sit there.
And I was kind of worried with my character because I was a mere mortal, whereas we had all these ghosts and vampires running around. I was afraid I was going to be underpowered, but really she had quite a bit of interesting spellcasting ability.
Yeah, once you got into
it. So that was really useful. You could pick things up. I could talk to people and not be, like, scary and crazy.
I was afraid we were going to have to, like, fight real people, which meant that... pretty much you and Doug would be the only people really fighting people.
Yeah.
Because we would have been sitting there going, I'm a creepy ghost or something.
Well, you could just scare them to death.
My spear passes right through you. Yeah.
They did do a good job of making sure that everyone was either demonically affiliated or an actual demon so that ghosts could actually do something.
Which, the flavor and of the...
Oh yeah.
Full setting, it's all about like demons, gotta kill them demons.
Well, at least in this quick start.
Yeah.
Well, but that's what they portray.
Yeah.
Makes sense that can't hurt the humans. You really shouldn't be hurting the humans anyway.
Oh.
Yeah, Mr. Vampire.
It was only the demon-tainted ones.
I know. Which was horrific. So speaking of horrific, Let's talk about the scenario itself, the adventure. What did we think of it? Did it give us a good idea of setting? I think we've kind of hinted at quite a few of these things.
It should have been set in the Wild West because, boy, did they love the railroad.
Yeah. It was kind of awkwardly laid out for railroading as well. Like, they would give you a ton of background information, like pages of background information, only to tell you that really what you need to do is get this girl to drag the players from point A to point B.
Which we almost completely just missed because
like,
of all the details.
There was an entire page about the aristocrats in the first act, an entire page about the lower class in the first act. There was so much background information.
How many pages was the quick start itself?
In total, 44 pages.
44 pages. How much of it was the adventure?
Okay. Well, the first 12 pages were
character sheets. So the rest was adventure?
Yeah.
Okay.
And about 5 of those pages were enemy or NPC characters.
Okay. So it sounds like they just took the background story, and rather than making it a separate section like some other quick starts, they shoved it right into the middle of the story.
It was intermingled, yeah.
Okay. It was intermingled? Okay. Yeah. Well, what do you think of it? Did that seem to work well for you, or would you have rather it
laid
out?
I would rather it have been laid out a little differently. It would have been, I don't know, I guess if I had spent like a day or two prepping for the quick start.
So you pulled a Ruby. You picked it up an hour or two before you had to run it.
I picked it up this morning, but that was not enough time to really, if I had picked it up and read it all and taken notes on what I wanted to say, then...
Gotcha. But, well, I mean, but that's fine. It's like a quick start. It's kind of meant for someone to be able to just kind of quickly pick it up and go, hey guys, I don't know what this is, but let's play it.
Yeah. There was a lot of nice background information if you wanted to get more involved, but it was...
Now, we did not play through all 5 acts. We played through 3, and then he narrated the rest because it started to get a little...
I thought it was kind of crazy that there was
two extra acts there.
Yeah, if you played this at a con, it would go over two sessions if you played all of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Now, we did go at a really slow pace to begin with because we had we were figuring out the rules. Yeah. And understand it. But I mean, with a quick start, you expect to do that, especially in complex. Right.
We played
like this
for 4 hours.
Yeah.
Did they have an example of combat?
No.
Because I felt like that would have been really helpful. Because a lot of times you'll see Susie rolls and adds her dice up like this, and the bad guy rolls and adds his dice up like this, and you compare them.
No, there was a section talking about opposed dice rolls. And then a section after that discussed combat.
And it was and then a section after three that. Paragraphs long.
Yeah.
Yeah, we
and
definitely
that includes
have the
little example.
There. I don't even think there was a little example.
We definitely had to infer some of the rules from some of the character sheets, giving you get a plus two bonus when doing this. Oh, that means we probably should be doing it this other way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we did have to kind of fumble through the very first combat, trying to figure out exactly how combat was supposed to work.
Yeah.
But I think we got a pretty good handle on it after that.
Yep. Yeah, once we got through that, I felt like it moved fairly quickly. It was just...
The mechanics were... I really like the initiative system. It was also a different take on it.
Yeah.
But the mechanic in actual combat was... Add stuff up, roll a die, because is the number greater.
It was really fast, because the combat was based on a single die roll for all the actions you wanted to do that round.
Right.
So it sped things up, and it was an interesting mechanic.
Initiative, and you do it in the order.
Yeah.
So it kind of has that Star Wars X-Wing minis feel of you set your maneuver dial.
Then everybody declare what you're doing, and then we see what really happens. As everybody scrambles to do something.
I definitely found having a scratch pad of paper to write down my numbers and do my little bit of math and stuff was useful.
And I do want to go and see if I can clarify defensive actions, just because that was kind of unclear in the quick start.
And movement.
But
we had no
movement
information.
There was absolutely
movement.
Nothing about.
Yeah.
Other than one of the spells the spells had ranges.
Yes.
But other than that, that was the only distance mentioned in the quick start.
Yep. Literally.
Yeah, we also had like a monetary conversion chart, but none of us had money per se.
Gear. There was no equipment mentioned.
Yes. There were people who had sword damage, but no mention of necessarily holding a sword.
So I'm a Victorian lady walking around a horse race. Am I going to be carrying a sword? I don't know. Probably not.
But
I have it on my character sheet.
But you're a protector of Albion, so maybe you do.
Yeah,
who knows?
Maybe it's hidden in your
bustle.
Umbrella or something.
Well, yeah, that'd be the other question. Where did you hid it?
Sword parasol.
Oh, where he hid the damn thing. William was carrying it.
Probably.
Drunk.
Yep.
That was your fault. He's like, you really like that.
Jerk.
Yeah.
Anything else about the mechanics or anything like that just kind of popped for us? Fizzled for us?
The mechanics were super simple because it's way more about the story than a lot of the other quick starts.
kind of reminded me a little of the way Savage Worlds is, where it's more about story than your skills and your whatever.
Yeah, so I did find the, if you have a bunch of actions queued up for combat, the first time you're blocked, you lose all the rest of your actions that follow.
Yeah,
that was
interesting.
Yeah.
It's like I blocked you once. Boom, you're done.
But I could see where it was useful, because while originally I was like, it's going to take forever to kill anyone, that was not the case.
No.
Like, if you actually...
Crazy woman with a spear comes in and just...
Yeah, if you're geared for combat, you could hack someone apart real fast.
Yeah, you get one good roll and...
It's over.
Yeah.
Well, and it really lends itself to everybody gang up on one person and kill that person, because they only get a certain number of defensive actions. So if like six people attack them, they can only defend against the first one.
Uh-huh.
And maybe that's realistic. I don't know. It's different from other systems.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dropping a drama point and able to beef up
your... Yeah, the drama points I thought were somewhat overpowered. Like,
Yeah, they kind of had an action point system.
Drop it and get a plus 10 to my...
But they gave... Yeah. The humans had 20 of them, and the non-humans had 10.
Right.
Which
turned out 10 almost was too many.
Yeah, I think using one pretty much every time we could roll, we still didn't go through all of them.
Yeah.
I used 8.
Yeah,
you
said
you were going
so.
Crazy.
Well, yeah, I was going nuts. I was like, yes, yes.
You're giving
so
us
damage.
You giving us 10 action points for a one-shot module?
Right.
Yeah, it's like, sure, let's use them.
Yeah, there's only one combat that we hadn't made it through, so we had enough to cover all of them.
I had 16 left.
Oh, yeah.
Now, we did not use them for any kind of skilled rolls either, though. Had we needed to...
Yeah.
Then they would have. We probably would have gone through them a little faster.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But you have to declare ahead of time.
Yes. And
I also think if we hadn't used the action points, some of us may not have been alive to make those skill rolls.
Well, it was so. And probably when you play a real module, it wouldn't be this way. But it was so railroady that we didn't really have to use any skills in between combats, because if we didn't immediately solve the problem and find the correct next thing to go do, there wasn't anything else for us to do in the module.
Right. Or a little
so
kid
you basically
would,
just
or,
it was written so that you just gave us all the information.
Yeah.
It seems like
Or a little kid would run up and go,
Hey mister,
why don't you come over this way?
in the second act, you could have spent a really long time trying to look for that little boy and never have found him ever.
Except we just made the big guy soil himself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I would have said, I'm going to spin a point, and the kid's right here.
Uh-huh.
Plot twist, he's right here the whole time.
He's in a meat puppet. He's inside the man. Puppeting him.
That would have been... you just
yeah.
And that's what turns the game disturbing.
So, as a vampire, I rolled really, really, really high on damage, so kind of ripped a dude's head off. Was
from a
little
girl.
And because he's a cruel vampire, he was,
only mildly cruel.
Mildly cruel. Yeah. he was just meat puppeting behind the girl with the head. When,
Wow.
Why not?
I am curious as to the power level of these PCs versus what you would expect to play in actual Ghost Valley.
Yeah, because these are the beloved TV and media stars of this thing.
And they were pretty hot, not gonna lie.
Yeah.
This would be like Green Ronin's jumpstart for DC, where they go, hey, why don't you play Batman?
Yeah.
This will give you a good feel for the game.
Exactly.
No. Wow. So, did we enjoy this quick start, and would this make us want to check out the full game?
I enjoyed the mechanics enough to check it out.
You have the full game.
Oh, I do. I mean, yeah.
You won it.
How'd you get that game?
You see, there's like this event that goes on. It's called like Scarab or something, and then they have an event like inside the event that's called like Iron GM.
Whoa.
Yeah, there's an event inside an event. And
it's promoted by an event inside the event called the Swarmcast.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
So there's like this Iron GM thing that I kind of won, and I won some stuff, and I picked up Ghost of Albion.
As one of many, many books.
Yes.
I like the quick start. I kind of felt out of my element here. Victorian era is not really my thing. Unless you just make it so off like a steampunk thing. I could roll with that, but straight Victorian tea parties, aristocrats, all that. I
don't know. Playing a pompous admiral ghost was pretty fun.
I think we chose character. The pregens that we ended up choosing were the appropriate ones for the people that played them.
Yeah. How weird was that?
Although, if my gaming group was playing this, I wouldn't like not join them and sit off in a huff. I'd be like, all right.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I wouldn't push for it.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of that same way. This is not the flavor of game I usually choose, but it was an interesting setting, and the mechanics were fine.
Yeah.
So I would definitely give it another shot if I had
friends that wanted to play it. I thought it was a fun game.
I think, I agree, it's probably not the flavor I'd go for. I'd lean a little more towards it than I would, say, Clip Space. But,
damn. way to drop the name hard.
I know.
Still but love no, that setting.
And there's really too many other game settings that I'm interested in. I'd give it a quick read, or I would at least play it again at a convention. I don't know if I would push for a full game, you know, well, full campaign.
I would be afraid that if you did see this at a convention, that the other people who are playing it were huge into the show and would be appalled
at our actions. Because that's probably what would draw them to the game. Like, if you were at a convention and you saw, oh, so Clayton's running a Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I love that show. I'm going to play it.
Speaking of which, if anyone wants to learn how to play that, we do have Buffy and Angel in our game library, so we're looking for GMs that are willing to pick up and learn that.
Well, since we're talking about games, I'm still working on setting up a time so that we can go on ahead and do the leverage quick start.
That's another one I'm really interested in doing.
I will say, though, for an RPG based off of a BBC series, it's pretty legit.
It is probably the best one I've seen based off of a BBC series so far.
I can think of some people that would really like this game.
Yes.
I agree. Not necessarily me, but I have friends that are into this kind of thing. The Victorian and the really dramatic kind of storyline where everything's just kind of over the top and all about the social interaction and tea parties. I do have friends that like that kind of game.
Pomp
and it was a
drama.
Very solid game, I thought.
See,
it's the drama.
I'm also skewed because one of the other games that I'm learning currently that I'm going to do a quick start for and running for different conventions is called The Kerberos Club, and it's a Fate system game, but it is set in Victorian England as well, but it has a little
very
more
different
feel. It's not steampunk, it's still very Victorian, but it also has that very over-the-top magic. You play in three different eras during the Victorian era, so it's where it's just starting, where it's become big, and then where they say, oh, you see people flying around, and that's commonplace. So, I mean, you can run the gambit in that one, so it's like...
Hmm. It is kind of like superheroes and the Victorian...
Yeah. So I guess I personally had a little bit of a colored view on this game to begin with, because like I said, I'm reading that.
Yeah.
But I like this one, too. It's a good, solid sounding and seeming game.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I enjoyed the quick start.
You get to play Lord Byron.
I got to play... Yeah. Yes, having gone to school and majored in English, getting to play Lord Byron in a game was really interesting. Not my favorite poet, but that's beside the point.
How many poets do you get to play in an RPG?
Right. So I could see where if it was the right group, something like that would be kind of appealing. But yeah, it's not really something I would probably go out of my way to play. Unless you said, hey, John, you get to play the ghost of, you know,
Christmas Past.
Coming next.
Yeah, if you said that, I'd be like, have fun with that game.
Coming next to Quick Starts. Dead Poets Society.
Dead Poets Society. All right. Well, I think it's a good place to wrap up this episode or this portion of Kicking the Quick. The game we played again was Ghosts of Albion by some company that makes
Eden Studios.
By Eden Studios that makes such popular games as
Ghost of Albion,
based off of a bunch of BBC stuff. Look it up. Internet's there for everybody.
Valiant. GM John.
All right, we are doing a quick start rules. My name is John, and with me at the table are, from left to right, not that anybody can tell, I guess, but sitting to my left is
Tim.
Was that your introduction?
The
Enchanter?
I would at least say that there are some who call me Tim.
I usually leave that up to the people. That's true, he does. So we have Tim, and then we have...
I'm Kristen, do a whole lot of Pathfinder at Firefly down here in Columbia, and I guess that's where everyone knows me from.
He's famous for that.
Yeah, there's only a few of us that do that.
And I may or may not be Jason, but at least today that's what my driver's license says, so I'm going to go with it.
And I, of course, am John. I don't know if I said that already.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'll say it again, because it's just that important. So, we're doing a quick start. So, what quick start did we pick? We picked, or I picked, rather, Valiant Universe, which is by Catalyst Game Labs, people who are famous for putting out the current version of Shadowrun, Battletech, and Cosmic Encounters, I think, is another one of their big ones. Plus, they have some other stuff coming to a gaming store near you, I'm sure. Maybe not our gaming store, but who knows. The basic gist of the game is it's a superhero role-playing game. It's set in the Valiant comic book universe. So in Valiant comic book universe, I think they say it walks the edge of a, something. So let's see. So how easy was this game to learn and how much prep time did it take? It took very little prep time. The quick start itself, the book is about, 20 or so pages or a little bit less than that. And about a little bit less than half of that is the actual rules for the game. So it really didn't take a lot of time to learn it or to prep it, because it's very nicely laid out, nicely set up. The rules were not hard to find in the book, and they did have, of course, add that caveat that this is a quick start, so more in-depth rules, I'm sure, would be in the actual game book itself, the full game. So let's talk about these pre-generated characters. The game had four pre-generated characters, and yes, there's four of us sitting around at the table. We each played a character. But we'll get into that when we talk about some of the game mechanics and such. What did we think about these pre-generated characters as far as the way the character sheets are laid out, the characters we got to play, all that sort of thing? Anybody who wants to start?
Well, I thought the character sheet was laid out pretty well. It was pretty easy to find everything, and everything was pretty easily labeled.
Well, I mean, one of the things that was nice is that it tells you what die to roll for certain actions or using certain powers. And the icon that says that is roughly shaped like the die that you're supposed to use. So, quick visual reference without even needing to read a number off.
One thing I thought was interesting is that unlike a lot of the sort of, superheroes that people immediately think of, the characters each sort of had one thing that they did. So, whereas, you think about, someone like Batman, who you've got martial arts and this detective thing, and or Superman with every superpower anyone ever wanted him to have. Like, the character I played, Zephyr, flying was the only thing she really did.
Right.
So, it's like most, if I, in a fight, I had somehow weaponized flying. I didn't have strength to go along with it. Torque was...
Strength.
Granted, you see a little more of that than just the person that can fly. I thought that was an interesting way to rein the superheroes in a little.
Okay. And I liked the way the character sheets were because everything was right. First off, everything's right there on the first sheet, on one page. It wasn't hard to find anything on the character sheet, like with certain other quick starts. And they did this really interesting thing where they threw these cues and action cues on there, which was sort of a thing to just kind of help you figure out a little bit more about your character, what type of things your characters would actually do. Yeah, I like the die type thing, how it's got the dies that are, the boxes are actually shaped roughly like the die types. You see something like that with, Savage Worlds does something similar to that?
I think so.
On some of their character sheets. So that was pretty cool. So anybody jumping into this for the first time would go, well, what die do I use for my charisma? It's D8. Oh, it's the one that's shaped like a diamond. Downside of that is the D10 is also kind of shaped like a diamond, but it's not as...
Yeah, it's more oblong.
It's not as long as... It's not oblong. It's more like a square that's just kind of turned sideways. And you've got these little bubbles to keep track of things like your armor and your health. So it's got that whole Scantron kind of appeal to it.
Because we all love those.
Because we all love Scantron.
Of course.
Let's bring our standardized testing into our games. So let's talk about the adventure itself, what we thought about the adventure and the setting. Now, before I get into that, I do want to say this. This game had something very interesting going on with it, where there wasn't actually a GM, per se. We each take turns being something called the leading narrator, or the LN, which means we all sort of took turns being the GM on the different scenes that we set up. So I know that kind of leads into what we thought about the setting and the adventure. I think that added a little interesting element to the game. So
back to the adventure. What did we think about the adventure or the scenario they gave us? And do we think that actually helped us establish or get an idea for the setting for Valiant Universe?
Well, the setting seemed to be like contemporary America almost, only with some superheroes, because we spent a big chunk of the adventure in either Chattooga, Georgia, or Las Vegas.
Or the Bellagio.
Well, it told us a little bit about it, in that all of the superhero characters we talked about were either sort of scientifically created, like Bloodshot, or were pretty much just mutants. So while we are talking about contemporary America, we're not talking about something that has, well, this hero is an alien, this hero is just a normal person, this is a school full of other heroes. But you do have a little bit of that. It's taking a little bit of the fantastic out of it.
Okay, I can see that.
That's the way I see it.
Yeah, it does have like a certain like secret society, underground movement kind of thing going on. Because the mutants, they're all like hiding or running away from someone, and it's not, they're not coming out being like, "Hey, look at me! I can fly and shoot lasers from my butt." But it's.
I don't think we had anybody shoot lasers. We did have someone who could fly.
Yes, but it's that whole like underground secret kind of thing. So you could have it could be like normal society, but all this stuff happens that we don't know about that goes on.
An unusual number of destroyed helicopters, though.
Well, to be honest, most of that was because of us. Only one of them was actually part of the plot.
Well, yeah, the helicopters were kind of a dime a dozen in that thing, weren't they?
As far as the scenario goes, I mean, we all got a chance to run things. I don't know about your guys' section, but mine was kind of skimpy on some details that I would have thought were important. Like, how many guys were involved?
Mine was like that, too. It just said, helicopters show up with guys coming out of the helicopters. And so, yeah, and that's why I was like, I guess there's... That's why I was, like, rolling a D4. There's two helicopters.
That leaves a lot of interpretation up to whoever's in that hot seat of how tough the challenge is for the players.
Yeah, well, and mine was basically just a boss fight. And, it was just me against four people. And it was like...
Right, because you also played your own character.
Yeah, I played my own character and the boss. And, it just felt a little bit limited. I mean, I probably should have used some more of the tokens or whatever to add some stuff into it. But, I can see, like, someone, when this goes around, that someone gets basically, like, the crappy part of the scenario.
Gotcha. Well...
Or,
Well, yeah, I mean, like my setup, I kind of had something similar to what Kristen was talking about, where, we didn't have a lot of solid details on that, on certain things, but this kind of goes with this aspect of this game is kind of that nice little, or interesting little in-between a full-on just story game kind of RPG, and just a basic, rolling dice, and was it superheroes punching each other in the crotch kind of game.
Yeah, it just seems like it could be really swingy depending on your group. Because if you get someone who just wants to go off the rails hardcore, and when it comes around to their time as the lead narrator, then it could easily go south for the whole table.
That's a good point.
You could also get people who throw in time traveling monkeys or something like that because they think, oh, this is gonna be cool and fun. And
oh, damn! I should have thrown in time traveling monkeys. That's what should have come out of those helicopters.
The thing that I think struck me the most is that the system is very interesting, gives a lot of freedom. It gives a lot of player agency and player narrative ability. But the scenario felt pretty railroady. There was one point where we're trying to get into the Bellagio Hotel. And we're trying to find a side entrance or something like that. And the scenario demands that we are going into the lobby.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's just because this is a quick start, but because of the shared narration, my concern would be that, granted, I'm sure this is only going to apply to pre-published scenarios, that they demand that scenes open in a certain way and close in a certain way, which means there's going to be some inherent railroadiness to the scenarios themselves.
Right, and I think some of that's I do want to. I'm hoping that some of that was just because of the quick start itself. Because we've been finding that with these quick starts, a lot of those scenarios tend to just be kind of railroady because they're trying to show off different things.
Well, there was a part that definitely wasn't railroady. Like, we could have skipped a scene depending on how one scene ended.
Very true.
We could have
skipped
a whole scene entirely and gone on to the next. So, I mean, there were some railroady parts, but there was a part where it was like a huge, however the first scene played out, that changed whether you even did an entire scene.
Right.
One thing that I really do want to call out Valiant for, they did well, is they gave you, what we played initially, or what we played here was one session's worth, and they include it, but we did not complete all of the material in the quick start.
Right.
Is that right?
Yeah, because there were four different different sessions worth of things. It's a four-part thing. And what we played through was one session, and then we played one scene out of another session, just so that each of us could get a turn as the lead narrator.
So, I mean, I just would definitely compliment them with the amount of material provided. You know, normally a quick start is really just designed to give you, say, 1 5-hour and done. This will give you a chance to let your group try out the game over several sessions.
Right.
To see if this is something you're interested in spending any money on.
Yeah. And I guess I should have said this at the beginning. This is actually the Valiant Universe RPG quick start rules for the Harbinger Wars, where you play the Renegades. There's actually about 6 or 7 different quick start rules they have, where you play different... It's different scenarios, and you play different groups. So that in itself means this is more than just your average quick start. You get, you know, it's choose your flavor from the Valiant Universe and play some of those characters from that. But I want to say each of the ones in there are also 4 different characters. And I think the storyline actually builds and progresses off of itself. So we played a small chunk of a larger storyline. So for quick start, for something free, you can get a ton of chances to play this, actually play different things.
So it's sort of like a mini campaign.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but let's talk about some of these other rules. Were there any interesting rules or things, aspects about the game that we thought really worked or really kind of shined or such in the game?
Well, I alluded to it previously. I liked the narrative control. I liked the plot points. Okay. That each of the players start off with 3 plot points and can earn more by being awarded by the lead narrator for doing really cool things, or can, you know, if they are out of plot points at the beginning of their next turn, they acquire one.
You get a plot point, yeah.
And the fact that you can use those either to interject any sort of narration that everyone agrees is reasonable, as well as just, you know, you do your typical Benny to reroll a die.
Right.
So I mean, I like the fact that that gave the game that sort of open feeling, you know, where you're not bound by a rule set. You are able to just, it gives the flexibility of just of a straight up storytelling game while still having a rules framework.
Right. So it's not just like Fate where you go, I'm going to do this to add some sort of narrative thing to the thing. You can also go, well, I'm going to reroll this die because I didn't like the way it came out.
My very first turn was to spend a plot point to make sure that the situation was set up just right so that I could throw a car engine at a helicopter.
Yeah, that was pretty awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a lot of freedom right there. Like, it didn't help me throw the engine at the helicopter any better. It just,
you just set
made
up
it
that
possible
it was there. Yeah.
That I could do that.
Yeah, so if you have, like, some cool idea you want to do, you can actually spend a plot point and do it.
Right, and they aren't stingy with those plot points. Like Jason was saying, beginning of your turn, if you don't have any more, you get one. Talking about those plot points, one thing I didn't really like too much was the fact that the lead narrator... Anytime a player character spends a plot point to do something, the lead narrator gets a plot point. But the lead narrator can only spend 1 plot point per turn. So we ended up with this mountain of plot points for the lead narrator because you just couldn't crank them out soon enough. So that'd be one of my criticisms.
But I mean, I also see, because the other side of that is if the lead narrator could just go through them all at any time,
Yeah, that last climactic fight we had, we would have had no chance.
It would have been...
At least, you know, if the lead narrator had wanted to use those things liberally.
Oh, yeah.
To re-roll things or to just place hindrances in the story. What I'm wondering is, as the, you know, during our own turns as lead narrator, were we being liberal with our use of the plot points?
See, that might have been it, too. We might have just been like, well, I don't really know how I want to spin this thing. Or, oh, I forgot I had these. Because I'm sure that was one of my things, was, oh, I forgot I had these things.
Yeah.
Actually, I think I used one and said, I don't know, there's some more helicopters showing up. Why not? You guys are taking out these helicopters way too quickly.
Yeah. I think we each did stuff like that occasionally, but I think because there's not sort of a dedicated game master or a dedicated narrator... You forget that you have this pool of stuff that you're supposed to be paying as much attention to, as well as, you know, looking over your own character and the NPCs that you're managing.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah. The player character I was using definitely took up sort of a backseat when I was a lead narrator.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because he hardly did anything during that whole stretch.
Yeah. And because honestly, if you're ever used to GMing a game, you kind of get in that mindset where you're like, well, I don't want to... make it seem like my character that I made is better than anybody else because I'm GMing the game. So you kind of fall into that with this.
Yeah, you don't want to have a GM PC.
It's like, that's why Torque is so much cooler when, when Kristen's not playing him. Or yeah, like my character, Peter Stanchek. I was like, I don't know what he does.
Well, it's also
he says, go team, go. That's what he does in the first scene.
It's just another thing to keep track of, too. Because when it comes back around to your point in the table, you're doing all the lead narrator stuff, all the NPC stuff, and your own character stuff.
Right. And I understand why because they want to have that rotating lead narrator, I understand why they do that. Because they don't want it to seem like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, this scene takes place and Zephyr's outside smoking a cigarette. So she's not going to be included in this scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I understand why they do that. And you're right, that's kind of, you've got a lot of stuff you're keeping track of already. Unless you get a scene like Tim's where you're like, well, I've got the boss character.
Yeah.
And my character.
In which case it was easy, I'm going to throw fireballs at him.
Yeah, at one point you're like rolling like attack and defense on your self, essentially.
Yeah, which is kind of odd.
What about the turns? I felt that, going to a different kind of mechanic, I felt the turns kind of flowed pretty quickly. I felt like we were able to get through this fairly quickly, which for a superhero game,
that's
good.
Yeah, that's a huge bonus.
What do you guys think? You guys think that was?
Yeah. Yes, really.
Having played champions and heroes and stuff, it's nice to, you know, be able to just zip through combat real quick so that the whole thing isn't just about one combat situation. You can actually get on with some soy.
Right. All right, the last kind of game mechanic thing I want to talk about that I thought was pretty interesting was this whole thing with your luck score.
Yeah. That was
neat. It was interesting because it kind of, we didn't have critical hits or critical failures, but we had this luck score. Each of us had a number. And if our stat or power dice came up on that number, no matter what else we rolled, boom, we succeeded on our action. What did you guys think of that? I know it got frustrating for you there at the end, Tim, when you were playing the boss. You're like, well, I make my defense roll. I got my luck number. Yay!
Yeah. I mean, I did like it when I was the player, cause, you know. but again, this goes back to me just having the one guy to throw against you versus, like, you guys with your small army of people. Yeah. But, you know, I like the luck die. I mean, like, Zephyr has a luck of one, which is, like, the best luck number because...
Right.
Because everyone's always rolling one, so, you know... It's like, oh, crap, I got a one. Oh, good, I succeed.
It's like, oh, wait, no, I got a one.
Well,
that's awesome.
It's just the fact that, you know, the worse your chance is normally, if you've got a low enough luck number, that actually increases your chances. Like, if you're rolling a D12 and a D4 for something, your luck is 4 or lower, you've got a much higher chance of rolling your luck than a D12 and another D12.
Right.
So normally that would be really good. 2d12s would be a really good thing to roll. But if you've got a really low luck, you want that small chance.
With that small chance. And...
One of the things, and I'm not sure I don't know if this was something that was actually in the book when we're talking about trying to do multiple actions, reducing the die type.
And I joked about it, but you know, I was thinking, you know what? If I tried to literally make as many actions as I could to lower the die type for my skill or for my attribute as much as I could, I would increase my odds of success by hitting that luck score.
Yeah. Well, and the way they kind of balance that is it's up to you and the lead narrator to to agree on that.
Yeah.
Now, me as a lead narrator, if you're like, I'm going to do this and this and this because I want to reduce it down to this, I'd be like, no, you can do two things.
Yeah. And I didn't try to do that.
Right.
But it was one thing that occurred to me as potentially breakable.
Right. And I think the only way that would actually break the game is if the lead narrator lets you get away with
right.
it, personally.
But since you've got a different lead narrator every scene also. That,
all of a sudden it becomes apples to apples. You got to figure out, you know, do I think this narrator's going to like it if I do this? I want them to pick my green apple instead. Yeah, I just compared this to apples to apples. Crazy.
Just like apples to apples.
Apples to apples.
It's like we were just playing apples to apples for 5 hours. It really was.
Right. Does anybody have any other rules or things on the character sheet they want to mention about this game, good or bad?
The fact that the word Brobarian shows up on my character sheet. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah, the cues and the tags they give us were pretty cool. Mine were kind of meh. For my character, but you guys had some cool ones. Like, well, you had one, Tim. What was it? I'm a snowflake. There's nobody else.
No,
like
it wasn't. I'm really funny.
Everything on Torque's character sheet is gold. Mine were things like, don't mess with me or quit bothering me.
Yo, bro, here comes the condition. Haha, I took a helicopter out with my bare hands.
Which you did, didn't you? And then Boom. You beat somebody up with the helicopter.
Gun show. Yeah.
Boom. Gun show.
Nobody looks like me, I'm a snowflake. And then Isaac Newton in the house.
The fact that you had... the fact that you had $51 bills.
Isaac Newton in the house.
Yeah, I had a roll of dollar bills. And a copy of Heat, Thermodynamics, and Statistical Physics.
I think my best one on my character sheet was, great, more jackasses with guns.
That seems true. We did face a lot of those guys.
The thing is in mine, I had this one I didn't get. You better slow your roll... Oh, this is going to get real. Got it?
I didn't get that.
I didn't get that either. Yeah, that's...
But everyone can relate with, this doesn't happen in Torkhala, man. But see, the cues, this sounds to me like someone went through the books and picked out their favorite lines of these characters' dialogue.
Right. And for a superhero game, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it does give the characters more personality.
Because a lot of us, we really didn't know much about the Valiant universe at all.
Right.
Some of us knew even less.
Cues were a really good way of learning about your character by just looking at a few sentences.
Yeah. Right. So that was pretty cool, I thought. And then you had different cues and tags for the different scenes as well. So, like, you were able to stress the fact, like, Tim was able to stress the fact that Vegas seems empty. There's nobody around.
Yeah.
I stressed that a couple of times. All right. Well, cool. We're going to go to the last and probably the most important heated question of the whole thing. Did you enjoy this quick start, and would this encourage you to check out the full game? Tim?
No, it sucks. Okay. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I wouldn't mind playing the full game, though I would be very picky as to who I played it with, because with the whole rotating narrator thing, I can tell you right now, there's a lot of people I wouldn't play with because they would kill the game, but... Yeah, I mean, with people here, it was enjoyable.
They'd be like, their narration would be like, you're in the sewers, and there's a rat.
Or the time-traveling monkeys with, you know,
so
kamikaze unicorns or some stuff. Like that. I've been...
Those two different extremes.
Yeah, you know.
There's a dude with a gun, he shoots at you.
Hold on,
you
I'm taking notes here. Flying or time-traveling monkeys and kamikaze unicorns.
Yes.
You heard it first here.
That's trademark, by the way.
All right, Kristen, what about you? Did you enjoy the quick start?
I did. In fact, it was good enough that I am kind of interested what happens after you take down the boss guy that we took down. So I did
read a little bit ahead, and it says something about...
I think you fight him again or something.
No, he, like, frees a bunch of the kids, and it's like, what? I didn't read enough, but I was like, I just kind of glanced at it, and I was like, oh my god.
Yeah,
but yeah. I'm actually curious to how this particular story winds up.
I wouldn't mind playing the rest of this to see what happens.
Well, sharp uptick in the sales of Valiant comics as a result of the Valiant Universe RPG Quick Start rules.
Well, what about...
I'm definitely interested in it. I like any game that gives players a lot more narrative freedom. I mean, I enjoy system-heavy games as well.
You're
but
also a comic book whore.
I am. Well, I was. I have not been current with comic books for a couple of years now. But I am a big fan of comic books and superheroes, and I like the fact that with the narrative freedom this gives you, you can accomplish a lot more of the fantastic and over-the-top things you'd see in a comic book much more easily than in something like Pathfinder.
Right. And I agree with Jason. That's all I got to say. No, I liked it as well. The kind of along the same lines of what Tim was talking about, I think that maybe that rotating lead narrative is not for everybody because it's a little bit of GM and not everybody can GM. Or you end up with time traveling monkeys.
Yeah, you end up with and people also, who can't GM well.
The other
right,
question,
right.
The other question I have is, how do you create these on your own?
Yeah, that's a very good question too. Like, how do we create this?
I mean, do you take turns writing the module?
Right. Is it like one of those stories where it's like, I'm going to write a sentence, and then Tim's going to write a sentence, and so when it comes back to me, it's like, oh, I don't want that to happen, so I'm going to make a backpedal scene that.
And we're throwing a monkey paw.
I know you guys were in Vegas, but this scene's going to take place in Georgia again. Because I didn't really want you guys to leave Georgia.
Because, I mean, a scene is not like the unit of play for an entire night.
Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, if a night's going to encompass more than one scene, then more than one person, then each of the lead narrators needs to be involved in crafting all that material. And at that point, I also think creating, just trying to plan for that next session, it's almost as complicated as trying to get everyone together to play that next session.
It could be.
Yeah.
So, on that note, we had fun playing Valiant Universe role-playing game Quick Start Rules. We'd be interested in probably checking out the rest of this massive Quick Start campaign. Just if for nothing else, see what the storyline goes on. You've heard our good stuff about it, and you've heard our bad stuff about it, which really wasn't too much as far as bad stuff. It does mention in there that in the main game, if you want to, you can have just one designated person as the lead narrator, but to me it's like, if you've set up that mechanic, why wouldn't you just roll with the old rotating lead narrative? Thanks guys, thanks for playing, thanks for letting me record this.
With these three quick starts having been complete, our gamers wander off into the haze of morning, vowing to return, vowing to kick in the quick. If you have comments, questions, or feedback for Kickin' the Quick, please find us on Facebook under the Scarab Swarmcast, or email us at swarmcast@scarab, that's s-c-a-r-a-b.com. We look forward to hearing from you. Music for the show is provided by Midnight Syndicate. Check them out on midnightsyndicate.com.